From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gustina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio and Governor Andrew Cuomo appear to be at odds again, this time as the U.S. attorney is investigating the mayor's fundraising tactics. Anti-pipeline activists are putting pressure on the state to stop a natural gas pipeline expansion after two other pipeline plans were dropped. Our political observer Alan Shartok shares his thoughts on the effect of the New York primaries on the presidential race, and we'll take a look at the efforts to fight the opioid addiction crisis in upstate New York. I'm Jessica Blaustein Marshall, in for David Gustina this week, and those stories and more we'll have coming up on the Legislative Gazette. In the past week, two major natural gas pipelines have been scrapped in New York. A third, which would expand a line that's near the Indian Point nuclear power plant, is still scheduled. But opponents are putting pressure on Governor Andrew Cuomo to use his persuasive powers with the federal government to stop the expansion. Capitol correspondent Karen DeWitt reports.
Opponents of new pipelines carrying natural gas extracted from hydrofracking have been having a good week. First, Kinder Morgan announced it would not build a planned pipeline through portions of New York State and New England, saying market conditions were no longer favorable. They faced lots of opposition. Then, on Earth Day, Governor Cuomo's environmental agency denied a key permit to the Constitution pipeline. It would have traversed Pennsylvania and upstate New York. The Department of Environmental Conservation said it could not guarantee that the water nearby would be safe. It also condemned tree cutting that had already occurred on the proposed pipeline's path, which happened even before the permit was denied. Walter Hang, with the group Toxics Targeting, is very happy.
It was just a stunning victory. It's making history. I don't think a giant transmission pipeline project has ever been blocked in New York, due to a recognition that the state simply couldn't guarantee that water quality violations would not occur. So that's really a red-letter day.
Among the opponents of the Constitution pipeline are the former brother-in-law of Cuomo, Robert Kennedy Jr. He led a rally on the steps of the Capitol earlier in April.
Please, Governor Cuomo, turn down this 401 permit. Stop this abomination.
The anti-pipeline activists would like to be 3-for-3. They're asking Governor Cuomo to help stop a third major pipeline, the expansion of the Algonquin Incremental Market Pipeline, or AIM. It would nearly double the size of a pipeline that runs very near the Indian Point nuclear power plant. Cuomo's not a fan of that pipeline's expansion, but states have very little control over the decisions of the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. Nevertheless, the governor wrote a letter to FERC questioning the safety of the venture, saying he's directed four state agencies to conduct a comprehensive safety review and asking that construction be halted until that study is concluded. Cuomo's been a longtime opponent of the nuclear power plant itself. He talked about it recently at a stop in Rochester.
Nuclear is one thing. Nuclear, a stone's throw from 20 million people, when you have no evacuation plan, is problematic.
So far, the federal government has not heeded the governor's worries on keeping the plant open. Cuomo's request to halt the pipeline project near the nuclear plant was also denied. The Federal Energy Regulatory Commission said Indian Point's owners, Entergy, and the Nuclear Regulatory Commission did their own study and found the pipeline expansion will be safe. Cuomo's environmental agency did issue water quality permits for the AIM pipeline back in May 2015, the same permits it denied to the Constitution pipeline last Friday. Hang, with Toxics Targeting, hopes the governor can find some way to rescind those permits.
I'm sure he could take effective action if he wanted to. We're pressuring the governor to end the addiction to fossil fuels in New York.
Hank says the denial of the water quality permit in New York for the Constitution pipeline can serve as an inspiration to other states who may also be facing opposition to proposed pipelines. Some in the state's business community have another view, though. The state's business council president says she's disappointed that fear-mongering influenced the decision to deny the permits. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
And now we are joined by our political observer, Alan Chartok. Alan, welcome.
Well, thank you. I always love the opportunity to talk to you on the show. It's very rare that I get the chance to do that.
Well, likewise. So this week you talked to state GOP chair Ed Cox. Did he have anything interesting to say?
Well, yeah. First of all, he's endorsed Trump. And as you know, he stayed out of it for a long time. He said that he wanted to give everybody a chance. But, you know, Trump is a New Yorker, and Ed Cox, of course, who happens to be Richard Nixon's son-in-law, is endorsing Trump, and it just has to help a great deal. What is interesting is that not only is he endorsing Trump, but he seemed to be endorsing Governor Martinez from New Mexico for the vice presidency. You know, it brings a woman to the ticket. It brings potential Hispanic support. I think he made a little news there. He's a thoughtful fellow. He's a terrific political operative. You may not agree with his philosophy. I know I don't always. But I know that he's, when it comes to state chairman, party chairman, he's really right up there with the best of the best. So when he comes up with some of these things, it's very important to the rest of the people in the country who are also political party chairmen in their states, who rub their chin and their whiskers and say, if Ed Cox, who is Nixon's son-in-law, is for Trump, that tells you something about the mainstreaming of Trump.
Now let's talk more about the New York primary results. Given the results of this past Super Tuesday in Connecticut and Pennsylvania, et cetera, do you think the New York results affected that outcome? Did they set Trump and Clinton up for victories going forward?
Well, you know, it's interesting that you say that, because the way that I'm looking at this is New York has two candidates here. Hillary Clinton is a New Yorker. Bernie Sanders is a New Yorker by birth, so it's really three, although he's from Vermont now. He talks like a New Yorker. He acts like a New Yorker. And, of course, Hillary and then Trump. And so that's a lot of New Yorkers at a time when New Yorkers have been shut out of presidential politics for quite a while now. We haven't seen anything like this, I think, since FDR. So what I'm thinking here is that it was predictable that the New Yorkers would win. Cruz, who had been so tough on New Yorkers, talking about New York attitudes and everything else, Cruz got shut out. Comes in, I think, in third place, which is, for a guy who thinks he's going to be president of the United States, really was quite a wipeout. He walked out with his tail between his legs on all of this. Yet, I just want to make the point that the people who won were New Yorkers, and that's not surprising. We see in a state like Ohio that Kasich is the favorite son, and he wins. We can make something out of it. Now, your point is very well taken, and that is, did it help in other places? And yes, because it really made the Trump dominance important. It made the Hillary dominance important, and it got exported to the next places.
And finally, what do you make of this latest catfight between Governor Andrew Cuomo and New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio?
Like an onion, this is layered. We don't really know. We know that the governor has no liking for Mayor de Blasio. We don't know why. It may be because they're competitors for the national stage. There was some thought that de Blasio was trying to position himself to be the, quote, progressive in the country. But whatever it was, Andrew Cuomo has been unremitting in his going after the mayor of New York City. We now know that there was some moving around of money in this election, that the mayor wanted to produce a Democratic Senate. So he got some people, or his people got some people, to put money into the party coffers where they could then support the Democratic candidates who are running for the Senate. If you give to the party, you can give anything. It's one of the great loopholes. If you give to the Senate candidates themselves, you are severely restricted in how much money you can give. So The way that we're looking at it here is he gave that money hoping to move the Senate over to the Democrats, get all the credit, and become the Democrat in the state. But unfortunately for them, it was an off-year election. The Republican predominance in some of these districts where some of the Democrats had won in the past now goes under the table, and all of the people who got the money lost. However, it's how the money arrived and whether anybody did anything illegal in moving that money around that we'll have to see when the district attorney in New York City district attorney Cy Vance and the fighting U.S. attorney Preet Bharara got together to do a joint investigation of the way all of this worked. And I think that there must be some knees knocking in the de Blasio camp. One last thing, Jess, and that is whether or not Andrew Cuomo is the one who dropped the dime on all of this, because a lot of people suspect he was, and that this is one more point in which, you know, the sort of character of Andrew is a very aggressive guy who comes out. I can only say he denies it.
Well, never a dull moment in New York State politics, that's for sure. Thank you so much for joining us, our political observer, Alan Chartok. You're listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm Jessica Blaustein Marshall. A New York State senator from the Hudson Valley has introduced legislation calling for increased penalties for people found violating election law. The bill's prompted by what he alleges were unlawful campaign contributions in the 2014 election tied to New York City's mayor. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn has more.
Republican State Senator Terrence Murphy, who spoke Tuesday in White Plains, is calling for heightened penalties in relation to unlawful campaign contributions to county or town committees. He introduced legislation April 22nd to amend the election and penal laws.
There's got to be a little skin in the game for these people. You know, my legislation is right now go from a E felony to a D felony, so 1 year up to 7 years on each charge. So if they're charged with five things, you're talking 35 years.
That's years in prison. This comes as the Daily News exclusively reported April 22nd that the head investigator for the New York State Board of Elections looked into the 2014 fundraising efforts by New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio and his team on behalf of Senate Democrats. That head investigator writes in the document obtained by the Daily News, quote, "The violations discovered by this investigation can only be described as willful and flagrant," end quote. Now that several media outlets in the New York City area are onto the story, Murphy says it's about time.
I'm happy. This is a long time coming. We said this 2 years ago. And, you know, they thought it was politics as usual. Oh, you know what? This is an election season. You're poo-pooing us. You didn't poo-poo it. Here we are 2 years later, and you know what? This is serious allegations.
The Manhattan District Attorney and U.S. Attorney Preet Bharara reportedly are investigating the matter. Speaking with WNYC, de Blasio denied breaking the law and says his office will happily participate in any investigations. Murphy contends the following.
This laundering money was used to dramatically exceed the contribution limits for state Senate races. Essentially, Mayor de Blasio was trying to buy himself the New York State Senate control starting in Putnam County.
Putnam County Republican Board of Elections Commissioner Anthony Scannapieco says a few weeks before the 2014 election, he learned through required filings from the Putnam County Democratic Committee of donations he found to be larger than usual.
You have a county committee which never had more than a $1,000 donation, all of a sudden getting $600,000+, and immediately sending the money back out to the Senate candidates. So he says something's going on here.
It was Scannapieco who filed the complaint in 2014 with the State Board of Elections, and Murphy has called on Putnam County District Attorney Robert Tendy to investigate. Here's Tendy.
I think at this point the word investigation is probably unfair. We're certainly examining it. We're looking into it, but it's too early to tell whether or not anything possibly illegal happened. We're just doing some fact-finding right now and gathering up, you know, as many facts as we possibly can. And then if an investigation is warranted, we would certainly look into that.
Tendi says media reports in recent days prompted him to examine the matter. An attorney for the Putnam County Democratic Committee declined to comment. Murphy has a message for de Blasio.
Mayor de Blasio, the Hudson Valley's not for sale. It never has been and never will be.
Murphy is kicking off his re-election campaign this week.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
Dozens of Capital Region residents turned out during a downpour to have personal papers destroyed at Shredfest 2016 this week. It's the first of a statewide series to help New Yorkers protect themselves against identity theft. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas reports.
The event in Albany ran from 9 a.m. to noon, an opportunity for folks to dispose of paperwork containing personal financial information. A shredding truck was set up in the parking lot at the Sidney Albert Jewish Community Center. A line of cars packed with documents stretched out onto Whitehall Road. Bag after bag of paper was dropped off to be ground up at no charge. Russ Haven of the New York Public Interest Research Group noted identity theft is a pernicious problem.
It's spring cleaning time. We've just wrapped up tax day. And now is the time to really think about how you deal with all the records that you have. For identity thieves, all this information here is pure gold.
Identity thieves can sift through curbside trash looking for medical records, bank statements, credit account numbers, financial records, anything that can be used to compromise someone else's identity. Mary Rozak with County Executive Dan McCoy's office says every 10 minutes, some 300 identities are stolen. Rozak's own credit monitoring service notified her within the last 10 days that she was being targeted, warning she should check her account. She did.
And quickly logged in and realized as I saw something that didn't appear quite right, made the phone call and started the process of shutting down a phony PayPal account that had just been opened in my name.
Shredfest events are being held across New York, part of AARP and Attorney General Schneiderman's efforts to help consumers avoid falling prey to identity theft. AARP National Policy Council member Neil Lane says victims spend countless hours trying to undo the damage, and many never recover.
In 2014, AARP surveyed the voters in the Capital District region and found that identity theft ranked as the top fraud-related concern, with nearly 9 out of 10 respondents saying they are worried about becoming victims of identity theft.
Tricia Bate with the AG's office advises everyone, be careful when giving out personal information.
Like your mother's maiden name or your social security number. And never, ever give out your personal information out to someone who calls you unsolicited. Think of the phone as a one-way street. Just hang up no matter what the caller says and no matter what the caller ID box says. It's okay to give out your information over the phone if you made the call to a number that you know is your bank or credit card company.
Haven adds, don't forget about digital information as well. He advises wiping hard drives clean, or better yet, destroying them so any information can never be retrieved. With an estimated 4 to 6,000 pounds of sensitive personal documents shredded at the JCC, organizers say the event was a success. AARP Associate State Director Laura Palmer.
This week is our big launch of Shredfest, but we will be doing shredding events around the state throughout the rest of the year.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
You're listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm Jessica Blaustein Marshall. A clinic in Liverpool in New York's Onondaga County recently started offering a new program that weans drug addicts off of dangerous substances like heroin by giving them safe doses of an opioid replacement. But as the Innovation Trail's Payne Horning reports, access to these potentially life-saving drugs is extremely limited in upstate New York, where health professionals are scrambling to keep up with the spike in opioid abuse.
When Melissa Ives was recovering from a brutal motorcycle accident, the opioid medication she was prescribed helped mask the pain. But eventually, those pills ran out, so she turned to a cheaper alternative. heroin.
I was addicted for 5 years. I could do up to 40 bags a day of heroin, and it's just a miracle I'm not dead. I am grateful to be walking and talking.
Ives, who lives in Fulton, attributes her recovery to the treatment she received in Syracuse, where many drug abusers in central New York turn because there are few clinics in the area with comparable services. One of those detoxification clinics is at Krause Hospital, where they offer an opioid replacement called methadone. It's administered daily under the supervision of health professionals. The hospital's chemical dependency treatment director, Monica Taylor, says people from 17 counties in central New York travel to Krause to get the daily dosage.
Right now, we have a wait list of about 380 patients for this particular treatment. So for the methadone program, there is probably at this point a 9 to 12 months wait before somebody can get admitted.
And Taylor says this is not your typical wait list.
There are definitely people that are continuing to use while they are out there waiting to get into the program. And we have heard of people dying that are on the wait list.
Conifer Park in Liverpool started sharing some of that load this month with their new methadone program, which will help alleviate the crushing demand. Conifer Park's director of regional services, Mike Kettle, says Krause and others were supportive of their efforts.
This is something we saw a great need for. We pushed forward with this. We got support from the state and the community. And I truly do believe today we are going to be saving lives.
But even with Krause and Conifer Park in Onondaga County, only 10 of the state's 95 methadone clinics are located in upstate. That can mean long commutes for people in the 42 counties that don't have a methadone clinic. Federal officials are trying to expand access to another opioid replacement drug called Suboxone, which can be taken at home. But eligible doctors are currently only allowed to prescribe Suboxone for 100 patients a year. Mark Stevens, whose son was once an addict, says that's not enough in rural areas like Oswego County, where only 3 doctors can prescribe the drug.
And if each doctor only gives 100, that's 300 people in this huge community, mm-hmm. Oswego County.
Yeah.
300 people, that's all they can take care of. And there's more than 300 people addicts out there.
The U.S. Department of Health is currently in the process of raising the limit of Suboxone prescriptions to 200 per year. And Central New York Congressman John Katko and Senator Kirsten Gillibrand have proposed a bill that would allow eligible doctors to prescribe an unlimited amount. But Stevens says even if Suboxone is more readily available, it's only part of the answer.
Some of these doctors, as they speak of, that get the Suboxone, keep them on it for 70 years. If you find a facility will wean them off it, then they get the proper help and educate them and then keep them going.
And those ancillary services, like therapy and counseling, which are part of a holistic recovery, are also struggling to keep up with the spike in drug abuse.
That's Payne Horning reporting. And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. Copies are available by calling 1-800-323-9262. Again, that number is 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1618. Or just listen or podcast it on the web at WAMC.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Jessica Blaustein Marshall.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.